thank you very much for having a chat with me today, Peter Curtis. I was really fascinated by your pamphlet. It's called Educating the Educator, A Meeting of Minds. Tell me about how you came up with the idea of having Karl Marx, who was born in 1818 and died in 1883, having a conversation with Paulo Freire, who was born in 1921 and died in 1997. How did you conceptualise this? It's such a clever idea.
It came about, there was to be a book published in celebration of the 150th anniversary of the publishing of Das Kapital, and the general topic was, what use does Marx have now in the 21st century, in effect? And well, I've been reading Capital now for 13 years, I think, with a group, and I would say Paulo Freire would be my, as a teacher, my mentor. One of the things that fascinated me about both Marx and Freire was the influence of Marxism on Freire's thought and actions. And we have two very opposed individuals in some senses. Freire was a Catholic, remained so all his life, ascribed to liberation theology, of course. And Marx, of course, has rejected all sorts of belief in mysticism. Yet we have two very powerful individuals using his ideas to think about how we perceive our reality, I guess. So that always fascinated me, and the idea of bringing the two together to talk about the nature of the world and how we transform it. Being two powerful figures in my life, I thought we'd try and bring them together and have a dialogue about those differences.
It's interesting because, like you say, Paulo Freire, he experienced hunger and poverty when he was a young boy because his father died. Yeah, he comes from Brazil, right? And it was formative in his understanding and his connection to people in general and his whole life's work.
Indeed, very much so. For him, of course, literacy is about liberation. But as long as we're illiterate, we can never have the combined force to replace the political economy of capital, I guess. And in a very real term, in terms of Brazil and its political state, was that any illiterate person could not vote, which is a huge proportion of the population, of course.
In fact, they called them not real people.
That's right. They were, essentially racist, but the idea that people were born poor because they were poor, and that was the eternal state of affairs, that there's nothing that could be changed there. So in terms of education, of course, what Freire called the cosmopolitan curriculum, you know, or the curriculum of the ruling class, was imposed on Brazilian peasants, which of course had no connection at all to their reality. So education was seen as a foreign import, if you like, into their lives and made no sense. Freire's whole idea of teaching literacy was to explore their actual world together in dialogue. And we all know that when we express things, when we express thoughts as language, things change. Even if we look at it at a therapeutic level, when people talk about the issues that concern them, things begin to change. Once you vocalise something, verbalise it, and others hear it, that's when the change begins. Of course, and I think it's the act of actually collaborating, talking, sharing ideas, sharing our misconceptions, and thinking about what could be done instead, or actually even understanding the reality of it, changes in those circumstances.
Well, the obvious connection between Freire and Marx, I reckon, comes out in this particular quote. If popular education is to provide the means to realising our potential, our capacities as human beings, then we stand in opposition to any practice which makes schooling little more than an instrument to adapt and reproduce our capacities to that which best serves the ever-evolving needs of capital. That's it in a nutshell, isn't it?
It is a nutshell, very much so. Unfortunately, we've lost that whole line of argument, along with the whole conception of a socialist alternative to, of course, is that was always uppermost in Ferrero's mind, was that the formation of consciousness and the critical consciousness in order to overthrow the oppressor, and that both were intimately combined. So he was always criticised often for politicising education. Of course, he was saying education is already politicised. What we don't do is teach that here. Somebody responding to the leaflet said to me he remembered that in a discussion with some Chinese teachers, they were saying, yes, we teach politics and we do it overtly. In the West, you don't teach politics, but you do it covertly.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. There's a whole lot of really interesting things in this pamphlet. It's a really fascinating read, actually, because part of what you've done is make it accessible by putting it in a pamphlet form like this and creating these characters who are given words. You must have worked quite hard to get this to be so succinct.
Well, because I had the time, unfortunately, in that sense, it sort of did evolve over about 5 years. So the first thing I did was to go through all of Volume 1 and look for any commentary that Marx makes on education, and isolated those passages. And, well, Ferrero, I've lived with since I worked in the community arts prior to teaching. That's where I first came across Pedagogy of the Oppressed. It didn't necessarily make all that much sense, but I knew it was right.
There's a couple of tenets that are really important. The business about the head and the hand.
Yes, indeed. I think that's a really critical point. And, of course, Engels makes that point in the part played by labour and the transformation from ape to man. Capital separates the mind from the hand, and I suppose the Romans used to call them the talking tool. So it's not far removed from that idea. Workers are there to use their hands, and the capitalists to do the thinking, which goes to the whole question of the ownership of the means of production and all that sort of thing, if we're ready to take economic power. The separation of head and hand is, well, a critical topic, and it still remains today, of course, adding in the big issue or the conundrum that confronts us all now with the evolution of the virtual world and the way it's evolving and what that means for literacy too.
Because of the element of Marx that runs through this, one of the quotes from Marx, which is pertinent, is, as you say, the pernicious illusion of the capitalist system is that we are free to work, albeit according to the conditions by the owners of capital.
So it is, as we all know, you're free to work or not work, but that has huge caveats, of course. We choose not to work, we choose to live a pretty distressed lifestyle, I would say.
Well, it's a false premise. You're not actually free at all.
It's a false premise. It is an illusion.
It's an illusion. And it requires everybody to... and that's where the education, the ability to actually have some sort of control over your education makes the difference.
That's right. In essence, there's a distinction to be made between schooling, which is what I describe as a production line, and education, which I would as you mentioned earlier, about fully realising yourself as a human being. And I think that's where the real distinction lies as well. That schooling is manufacturing, if you like, or conditioning consciousnesses for a life under preserving capital. I think our quote Adam Smith there is saying, well, you should educate children as long as they don't decide to overthrow their oppressor.
Which leads directly into this business about how can education stop at the gate, basically.
No matter what we're doing, as teachers, we are delivering an agenda. curriculums are devised and subject content is developed with particular thinking in mind. I mean, today, for example, prior to teaching, the idea that everyone should have access to an education, should be an involved citizen in the democracy, which is how the liberals would put it, people like Dewey in America these days, who likened education to that of scientists, the community of scientists, sharing ideas, disagreeing, arguing in the best senses of the word. That's how he thought a community of inquiry should be, which is not dissimilar to Palafreri's culture circles, where people come together and discuss and debate, disagree and argue as they learn to become literate. But they're also understanding each other and the world around. Whereas I think, in general terms, schooling today doesn't do that. Just doesn't connect to the real lives of real people. And I think there is a huge questions about how curriculum is delivered in schools.
Ferreira says that the significant problem always is how do we transform this reality into a better one? The oppressors are interested only in changing our consciousness, not the conditions that oppress us. Authentic thinking is concerned about reality, which I suppose is what you're getting at.
Yeah. I mean, Marx made the point about education reform evolving out of the factory acts in Britain in the 19th century. You know, yes, everyone should go to school, everyone should have schooling, everyone should be taught to read and write, but of course nothing was done to change the conditions that produced that problem in the first place.
People weren't wealthy enough to actually be able to not work and send their kids to school.
Of course.
Yeah. They couldn't eat.
Don't change the conditions, but you say that they have to go to school. And of course that was an economic impossibility for many, many families where everyone was working, including the children. But yeah, formation of consciousness, a critical consciousness, to become conscious, I guess. So he went into places that Marx didn't necessarily go into. And that was, you know, the self-realisation of the conscious self. In order, you know, to be fully conscious of yourself and become a in effect, an agent, only then can you become conscious of others. And that's why I think dialogue is such a critical aspect of his approach.
So Peter, how can people get their hands on this pamphlet? I know it's $5.
It's $5. Any money that we get goes back into producing more. You could email improvising12@protonmail.com.
Okay, good.
That way I can get in touch with you.
Okay. Thanks for talking to me, Peter.
No, thank you very much.